Thursday, June 3rd, I woke at the reasonable but not self-indulgent hour of 8:30, had breakfast, and looked forward to 5 delicious free hours before time for the harness of hairdo and corset and gloves and off for the commencement address. The lawn sloped down to a perfect little horseshoe of white sandy beach, black lava rocks to the left, and straight in front, blue and green Caribbean, changing color with the depth, brilliant in the sunshine, mountains on the other side. I lay on the sand, swam far enough out to get good and tired, came back and tried snorkeling. Getting in and out, one had to watch for the sea urchins, myriads of them, black balls varying from the size of a lemon to a cantaloupe, with long black spines sticking upward in all directions. Bess and Tony and I got our snorkeling mask and into a motorboat with a nigger lifeguard named Randolph, whose English might as well have been Portuguese, for all I could understand. The coastline is dotted with these lovely little perfect horseshoes of white sand, and at the second one up was a promontory of craggy rocks. And off it, Randolph said there was some good snorkeling. First, I tried the all-over mask and the fins. It was one of life's best experiences. A new world. Sea fans, fragile as lace, gray and purple and green, waving gently in the currents. Rain corals, some as big as an elephant's side and perfectly round, with exactly the convolutions of a human brain. Thousands of years in the making, they tell me. And tall plants called gorgonians that stretched upward some 8 or 10 feet, as well as I could judge beneath the water, and it's probably deceptive. Long, finger-like tubes, 20 or more of them, swaying in the current. For all the world, like those plants you see in horror movies that are cannibalistic, wrapping themselves around a victim if he comes too close and devouring him. I swam through millions of little tiny silver fish. I don't know what happened to them because I didn't feel them, but there they were. Tube sponge, like hollow purple fingers sticking upward, and some coral that was orange in color and much that was yellow, and every now and then a bit of red, but the fish were the wonderful things. Lots of little bright yellow fish, young blue tang they call them, and as they grow up they change color. Rock beauties, yellow about halfway back and yellow tails, and the rest of them brown. The four-eyed butterfly fish, oval, almost round, bright black spots, surrounded with a white ring close to his tail, one on each side, for all the world like an extra pair of eyes. But the most beautiful was the queen angel fish, yellow and blue-green, variegated, so bright you could almost hang it up and use it for an electric light. The banded butterfly fish, gray-white with precise bands. Each time I saw a new one, wished I could tell somebody about it. It was so exciting, so wonderful. Most of them were quite thin, although some seemed as long as 2 feet. Perhaps the most startling of all was one whose every scale stood out. You could practically count them. Shades of yellow, orange, amber, brown, some black, and underneath, pinky red. It was later that I found he was called the red-bellied angelfish. It was a wondrous world, and I loved it. But my reason for coming waited for me. First the hairdo, then my prettiest new dress, white, cool-looking, with the blue-green beads like the sea, and on the boat for St. Thomas. Governor and Mrs. Pywanski took us up the hill to the College of the Virgin Islands. And if you ask 5 people, how many the student body is, you'll get 5 different answers. I finally decided it was about 275 full-time students, 11 graduates, and a number of night students and part-time students. They are very sensibly geared to teaching them the occupations they can make a living out of on the island. Hotel administration, construction, business administration, engineering. First, I met and congratulated 11 graduates. One was white, one Spanish, judging by the name, the rest Negro. With a tune of pomp and circumstance, played by the Christiansted High School Honor Band of St. Croix, slow as a funeral dirge, we marched up this high hill, 30 faculty, the graduates, the trustees, and I. By this time in my long black gown with the white bands of my degree from the University of Texas. It is probably the most glorious view I'll ever see a commencement ceremony in. We stood on the top of the high hill. The sea stretched below us and the mountains on the other side. There was an excitement in being present at the first commencement of a new institution. There were several brief speeches, one which startled me a little bit. Senator Maduro of the Virgin Islands Legislature requested that I take back to the President the hope of the islands that they could elect their own governor and participate in national elections. And then Governor Pawanski introduced me. My brief message was that I was glad they were preparing to keep their brains and talent at home, their best people, by training them at home so they could give the islands the leadership it would need in the expanding decades ahead. The best line in it, I thought, was, "The winds of change, certain as the trade winds, are sweeping over these lush lands and shimmering waters. The changes will be wise in proportion as they are directed by a trained generation which really cares. That is what we all hope this college will produce." And then came the really important event of the day. The president of the college, Dr. Lawrence Wanless, introduced Mr. Henry Reichold, who announced a gift of $100,000 to the College of the Virgin Islands. This is a second portion of a gift that will total $1 million. Mr. Reichold has chemical plants, it seems, on the island, and also a hotel called Bluebeard's Castle. He was quiet and shy and had little to say. But not so the other benefactor of the Virgin Islands College, Leo Harvey, who had given a $70,000 check from his great aluminum company to build a student center. I pulled the ribbon on a plaque dedicating it, and he made a thorough, delightful, but really rather lengthy speech. There was a reception. I stood in line with the governor and Mrs. Pawanski. Various university officials took turns introducing me. And here I got the surprise of my life, because I would have sworn the crowd seated in front of us did not number more than 300 or 400. I stood in line for an hour and a half, and I do believe 2,000 people filed past. No great feat, but I did feel like I was earning my vacation. Interesting, the thoroughly delightful thing to me about it was a great variety of the people. Some well-dressed, sophisticated, even elegant. Some quite modestly dressed, poor in fact, but equally dignified, equally at home, poised and sure of themselves. There were a good many Danish names left over from the names of Danish dominion, but most of the population, it seemed to me, more than 4/5, were Negro. Finally, the last guest filed past. Hasty goodbyes all around, and back to the boat, and 3 days' freedom. My thoughts went to Lucy, just as I was getting my hair done. I had a breathless call from her. "Oh, Mother, the most wonderful thing in my life is happening. Daddy wants me to go to Chicago with him and play First Lady. You know you're not here." And I said, "That's just wonderful." Oh, and I was a little surprised that she was so delighted to play First Lady. And then she went on to say, "Oh, no, that's not it at all, Mother. Beth is here, and she's going back to Marquette. And it's the big college weekend, and they're having dances and all sorts of parties. And she brought down her boy with her, and he's just tons, Mother. He's a tough kid." Tough means great, wonderful, nice, attractive. So she wanted to spend the night in Chicago after her daddy's speech was over with friends of Beth, and then go on to Milwaukee and spend the weekend with the Feldsteins, who had had one of the barbecues during the campaign for young Democrats. She had stayed with them. She traveled with them, she said. They'd been very fond of her. They were very nice, Mother. Very reliable. Actually, I remember they've been to the White House, and I've had several nice letters from them. So I didn't feel too averse to calling them and asking if it would be convenient to have a little girl spend the weekend with them. The problem was, Daddy was leaving in an hour. I had to do it right now. That is the way Lucy's life goes. I called the Feldsteins. Nobody answered. Then Lucy called back frantically and said that one of her agents, Jim Goodenough, I believe it was, who had left her detail, had gone to settle in Milwaukee, he and his wife. She'd adore to stay with them, and she knew it wouldn't trouble them in the least. So I tried to reach him, or rather his wife, to no avail. Her number didn't answer. I was getting frantic, too. Then I got Jerry to help me. He found Agent Goodenough. The agent said yes, indeed, Lucy could stay with them. But he thought that he could locate the Feldsteins, and perhaps she'd enjoy it more with them. They'd have more room. Sure enough, he did. Talked to Mr. and Mrs. Feldstein. They did sound delighted. I phoned Lucy back, and she got off in the nick of time. The greatest weekend of our life. Back at the beautiful haven of cottage number 7, Tony and Matiana and Bess and I sat out on the terrace for our drink, this time not the exotic rum punch, but the more conservative rum tonic. I remembered the advice of my dear Senator Dick Russell, who said, always choose the wine of the country. You'll get the best that way. But the sweet, fruit-filled rum punches of the night before were a little too young and gay for me. Bess went to bed rather early, and Tony and Matiana and I talked comfortably and happily about Belle Patilla Tippett and Elaine and Bernice and Edwina and their possible visits to Washington this summer, and the visit that I did have and enjoyed so much with Winston, and not quite so happily about Sarah and Susan, whose lives are filled with shadows these days, and about Tony's friends in Santa Fe, Giorgio, the McKinneys, the Newmans. We even talked about the brick house and its probable future. I think a very frail phantasm of a future, and its Tennessee Williams, William Faulkner, present. This was what part of what I came for, quiet and peace.